again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. Storyboard 30 is taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the nonprofit multimedia publication that focuses on our local arts, community, and culture. And I'm your host, Mark Fleischer. For today's show, we pay a visit once again to one of our favorite venues here in Memphis, Tennessee, right in the heart of Midtown at Playhouse on the Square on the corner of Cooper and Union. We are once again sitting with Michael Detroit, executive producer of Playhouse on the Square, and we are on the Playhouse on the Square stage once again, which is always fun, and sitting amongst the platform used for the current show in production. So, Michael, welcome to the welcome back to your stage again.
Thank you. Yes, welcome to our stage, Mark. Yes, right. Welcome to our house. Yeah, we're on the set of the Scottsboro Boys, which runs through February 19th, and it's a wonderful show. It's a beautiful show, beautifully directed, acted, sung, choreographed. The band is awesome. It's just a wonderful story to tell, and it's wonderfully brought to life on the stage by some wonderful talent. So we're very proud of the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So by the time listeners are hearing this, mm-hmm. The show will be moving into its second weekend,
yep.
right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I get to take a look at it. I get to see the show coming up this weekend.
Great.
The topic mm-hmm. of the show, which leads to my first question to you, which is, are you a soothsayer of some kind? Because because the shows we're going to talk about today over the next couple months that are coming up over the next couple months mm-hmm. Are so timely. I was just reviewing them again, and they're so timely.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly not a soothsayer of any kind. These are issues that are not new,
right?
And they won't easily be resolved. So they're going to be around for a while, and it's going to be a messy thing. So, you know, whether we're talking about race or abortion rights or, you know, political leanings or journalism or anything like that, there's a discussion to be had that's not going to go away anytime soon. What we oftentimes find, I think, in society is that sometimes it's comfortable not to have a discussion. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll go away if we just don't talk about it, but that's not the job of theater. It's our job at times to make sure that that important discussion is being had.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, you know, when we talk about race, certainly with Scottsboro Boys or with the show that, you know, we just wrapped up, If Pekin Is a Duck, Why Am I in Chicago, deal with timely issues for sure. With Roe, the same thing will happen when we talk about, you know, reproductive rights, all of those sorts of things, which is still very much in our mind and thoughts and heart and all of those things, very important. And journalism is a big part of it too. So that's why we're producing Ink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these, like you said, are topics that are, I mean, these are issues that are always topical.
Yeah.
But right now they feel especially hot, mm-hmm. Volatile even, right?
Absolutely.
Under the current state of affairs in this country. Yeah.
And current state of affairs in Memphis, Tennessee, in the Mid-South, right?
Yeah.
You know, we have the honor at Playhouse of having the ability to produce a number of shows each season. This year, we're doing 14 on our three stages and an additional one that tours a 15th show. And when you do that many shows, you get to talk about a lot of different things. And they're not all issue shows. Some of them are just fun and easy and let's go take a break and have fun and, you know, sing along, whatever that might be. You know, so we'll do The Wizard of Oz. We'll do Jersey Boys. We'll do some of these types of shows. We'll do grand shows, you know, for later in the season, like Natasha Peer and The Great Comet of 1812. But then we will also do shows for kids like Freckleface Strawberry and P.Nocchio. Mm-hmm. And then we will do shows that we need to talk about that subject matter.
Right.
And it's serious. And hopefully folks coming in will be entertained in a way that they've seen a good production up on the stage, but also walking out having thought about what they've just seen, creating mm-hmm. a discussion point of some sort And maybe, you know, we're not necessarily here to change any minds about anything. We're just here to really create the discussion point where hopefully they will maybe think more about whatever that issue might be.
Theater's a good outlet, mm-hmm. A healthier, we've talked about this before, but it's a healthier outlet than, let's say, you know, typing things onto Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So this is a question around how regional theater works. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested, and I think I've asked this question before, but it's worth revisiting. Mm-hmm. How far in advance do you plan a season and you start acquiring rights to shows?
It's the standard answer for us is about 18 months. Okay. So we will have a season coming up here in the next month, within the month of January, you know, going into mid-February. We will know what at least the majority of our shows for the 23-24 season is. So we're planning now for shows that will be in June of 2024, mm-hmm. right? So that gives us about an 18-month time frame, right? Now, that being said, we already know some of those shows, and we've already placed them into our brain pans and, you know, into our Google calendars and all that kind of thing to see where they might land. Mm-hmm. Because the rights were available when they were available, and we wanted to make sure we scooped them up. Some of the shows we want to do, the rights just aren't available yet, but I bug our friends up in New York at the licensing companies certainly once a month to say, just checking on that, you know, show that's really popular. When are we going to get it?
Mm-hmm.
There's a show I'm trying to get that is closing, just closed, in fact, up in New York. A wonderful musical. And it's rather edgy. And none of the licensing companies are picking it up currently because mm-hmm. of its subject matter. It's not a show where the subject matter easily tours, let's just say.
Uh-huh.
But it's a perfect show for Playhouse on the Square. So, you know, how do I get the rights to that, right? So I can't go to Music Theater International. I can't go to Concord. I can't go to, you know, pick a licensing company. So I've got to find out who the owners of the piece really is, who they are,
mm-hmm.
and say, okay, so if you're not going to give those license, you know, that license to somebody, or they're not picking up the license, how about giving it to me and let me produce it in Memphis, Tennessee?
Uh-huh.
Because if we can produce it in Memphis, Tennessee, you can produce that show anywhere in the United States.
Yeah.
Which has, you know, the licensing companies, I will say, kind of understand that about Playhouse on the Square.
Yeah. So we'll dangle that carrot out and know that there's something coming that
we're working on it.
So let's talk about the topic of the subject matter of the Scottsboro Boys.
Yeah.
We talked about this a bit last time, but it's, mm-hmm. again, definitely worth repeating.
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, it's a musical by Kander and Ebb. And it came out, certainly pre-COVID back, 2010, I think, was the first iteration of it. And it's based on the true story of the Scottsboro Boys, who, you know, these nine young men, boys, were on a train traveling towards Memphis, Tennessee, and were wrongfully accused of raping two white women. And it's based on the literal trials and tribulations of these young men having been convicted wrongfully numerous times, and then how each of them, in one way, shape, or form, outlasted that, conviction. So either they were exonerated or they died or disappeared, whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And the conceit of the show that they put them in this world is it's as a minstrel show. And Jared Johnson, the director, and Emma Crystal and Tammy Holt, the artistic team, director, choreographer, and music director, have done a wonderful job about taking the story that is presented within this musical and actually obviously deals with trauma. It obviously deals with very serious subject matter, but creating a sense that these men find value and joy out of who they were as human beings outside of what that specific trials were about. And I think they do it wonderfully. I think the creation that's on our stage is, we've had a number of performances already, and talked to people coming out into the lobby going, everything from, I had no idea that's what the Scottsboro Boys was about. Mm-hmm. Something as simple as, just knowledge, but also coming out going, I am changed by having watched this story and what these young men went through. And isn't it a shame that this is still happening today?
Central Park 5, I think of.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's still timely. It still affects us. And it was written and created in such a way that it was right for its time when it came out in the 2010s, let's say. But what Jared has done with this production has taken it, I think, to a new level, to a better level, quite mm-hmm. frankly. There are aspects of blackface that they did on Broadway we're not doing. He and his team and the cast have been through quite a journey putting this show together. Mm-hmm. And as such, so has Playhouse on the Square. There were things about the show and the journey through which this talent went through to put the show on the stage that affected certainly them, but it has affected us as an organization as well. I've learned a lot from it. I've learned a lot about myself. As an organization led by a 59-year-old white man, there are things that need to be said and done and challenged, and we're up for that discussion. Mm-hmm. And it really did, some things really came to the top of discussion internally as an organization that I think is wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as we said, I mean, the timeliness of this, these are, like you said before, issues that are always topical. But here we are sitting here on a Monday, mm-hmm. and the Tyree Nichols case, mm-hmm. Was presented to the family.
Yeah.
Literally within the last few hours as we're sitting here talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, listeners, when you hear this, this is when this is happening as we speak. Mm-hmm. It's again, like you mentioned, issues that continue to pop up.
Yeah.
And something that we as a country continually grapple with, mm-hmm. The original sin.
Yep.
And so on and so on. So I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I will say that's wonderful about this production and many of the shows that we do, but certainly this one, it provides a platform for some really wonderful talent in this city. Mm-hmm. A lot of the folks that are in the show have never done a show at Playhouse, which mm-hmm. Is a shame, but thank goodness they're here now, and doing the wonderful things they're doing, presenting the talent that we have in Memphis on a stage with a show like this is a wonderful honor for us to be able to do it. And, we thank them for being a part of this production. It's just one more, I kind of chuckle about it because I think we sometimes take it for granted. There's just so much wonderful talent in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And to have vehicles with which they can show their talents, I think is just awesome.
Yeah.
So we're very, very happy to be able to do that.
So the next show coming to Circuit, and I know they're in rehearsals right now because outside of my office, I hear them.
Up on the fifth floor.
Up on the fifth floor.
You're hearing some interesting things through those walls up there, Mark.
So I have to say, I don't hear the actual dialogue as much as mm-hmm. I hear some spirited conversation. So the show is Row.
Yeah.
It's coming to Circuit Playhouse. They're currently in rehearsals. And, oh boy, just getting a taste of some of the conversations.
Yeah.
Talk about something that is topical. I think back to my original question to you about when did you start looking at getting the rights to this show?
We're
going back 2.5 years, I'm thinking.
Yeah, this was a show that we had initially in our 1920 season, and that we ended up canceling it. I think it was going to be towards the end of, it was going to be March, April, May, somewhere in that ballpark of 2020. Mm-hmm. If not, it was going to be in the first part of 21. Anyway, before we knew about COVID, certainly, but also it was before the Supreme Court decision came down. So when Lisa Loomer wrote this, she was kind of seeing some of the writing on the wall, what was going to happen. And so she wrote this play. We read it. I said, this is great. It's timely. Let's produce it before the Supreme Court decision comes down.
Mm-hmm.
So we can keep that discussion going. And of course, COVID happens. We can't produce. Supreme Court decision happens. We're going, is this still relevant? Is it still making a point? Is it kind of, you know, bitter crackers after the fact? You know, what is it? Well, so we went back to the playwright, Lisa Loomer, and she had, since the Supreme Court decision, she did rewrite some of it, but she created a prologue that then got added to the end of the show that puts the show in perspective now that they've had this most recent decision with the Supreme Court.
Wow.
So it makes it even more timely. And we were very fortunate to get the rights to the show as early as we did when we were going to originally produce it. But now to still have it, because, you know, yeah, the Supreme Court decision happened, agree with it or don't agree with it, that's great. Do one of those things. I know where I lean, but it's still really a discussion to be had because it's not over.
Right.
It's just not over. You know, that decision made by those people are not going to change people's opinions.
Yeah.
So in my world, I think it's a great thing to keep that discussion moving right along.
Oh, yeah.
You know, keep people talking about it, thinking about it, and if they want to change the world again, I'm all for that.
Uh-huh. So that opens February 3rd at Circuit across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. Like I said, the timeliness is just amazing. And listeners, you're in for some hearty discussions from what I've heard upstairs. Yeah. The next show coming up really into the spring then, Freckle Face Strawberry the Musical.
Definitely not Roe. Definitely not heavy, you know, in its subject material. For sure.
A lot lighter.
It is. You know, it's
lighter, but I'm sorry.
No, go for it.
Lighter, but still very relevant.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, it's based on a book by Julianne Moore. And it's about this young girl who has freckles, and she doesn't like being different from everybody else, and she tries everything to get rid of her freckles. How do I stop being unique, you know? And of course, it's all about acceptance for who you are and what you look like and, you know, how you present yourself to people around you. And of course, that's timely. That's been timely for thousands of years. You know, it always will be, because there will always be insecurities and how do I fit in, and embracing the differences that we have. So it's a wonderful little musical. It's, you know, for the kids, but it's really for the family.
I can't help. When I was glancing at this earlier, I could not help but think about, you know, on our phones now, there's like a million different apps that you can use to, you know, airbrush your face as you know, like even live streaming or something, you can airbrush your face. And so it's, again, topical from that perspective, and how the idea of having or wanting to look like everybody else is still in kids' minds. And it's in adults' minds too.
And it's in school, you know, does she get along in school? How does she make friends? Well, if I, you know, change myself and look like everybody else, maybe it'll be easier. And then of course you find out that it's really just the opposite. We enjoy each other's differences far, far better than people who are exactly like us.
And that opens March 10th, again, at Circuit. So Circuit's getting a lot of mileage put on it this, the spring.
That's true. You know, we give ourselves some time to get the theater back in shape. And, you know, there's a lot of wear and tear that goes on when we put shows on our stage. We used to do 18 shows on our three stages.
Wow.
And there were a lot of great reasons why we did that. But it was extremely challenging for our production teams and our acting teams and things like that. It was constant. And there was no time to shut the theater down, fix things, you know, repaint, make sure all the safety lines are safe, all those kinds of things. It also gave us an opportunity to rent some of our space out and get some other earned income in. as well.
Right. And March 24th, again at Circuit, Inc. Now, obviously, this is something I'm particularly interested in. I'm interested in all these, but this one in particular, what is Inc.?
Yeah, so James Graham play, and this is another one that we had on our radar pre-COVID. So, you know, with the elections that came through, it was very obvious, let's say in the last, you know, just say decade, the last 10 years, how obviously different the various networks were, certainly television, certainly the newspapers and things like that. Everybody seemingly took a side. And so much of it was opinion as opposed to, I guess what my term would be is journalism, you know, unfettered journalism. It was opinion pieces. And of course, we saw that through the last two presidential elections, even to the point where, you know, and I'm putting in air quotes on the radio, you know, reporters, you know, had to go to court and say, well, of course I wasn't telling the truth. It was entertainment. You know, they're even admitting it's entertainment now. So when it's entertainment, you can tell what it, you can say whatever you want. It doesn't matter as long as people buy it and, you know, watch the advertising, I guess.
Right.
Well,
right.
So this particular piece deals with Rupert Murdoch and the origins of this kind of foxification of journalism, where, you know, we just make up things, as outrageous as it might seem. And in this moment, that's the most outrageous thing we can think of. And 2 days later, I've got something more outrageous we can talk about. We certainly see that in journalism. We're seeing it right now rampantly in politics.
Yeah.
People just making up anything. You know,
George Santos,
exactly.
Anyone?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but certainly before him, you know, just, and the more you say it, the truer it becomes in certain people's minds.
Yeah.
So this play dives into that, dives into the origins of that in Europe, and how it was now then going to be brought to the United States. It's a wonderfully written show. Some really good character work will be in that show. Have a guest director, Warner Crocker, who's coming in to direct the show for us from Chicago.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That, yeah, that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
And again, that's March 24th at Circuit Playhouse across the street. So I asked this question last time. Mm-hmm. It's always worth asking again, is how have audiences been? How, you know, how have ticket sales been?
Yeah. Up and down. Up and down. We still need to sell more tickets. People still need to come out. More people need to come out and see live theater, live concerts, live anything. And the challenges are there. I mean, we get it. There, folks have certainly found a comfort being at home and, you know, watching the streaming devices, things. We get that. Folks have discovered the outdoors more, and that's wonderful, too. We need there to be a resurgence still. It's been a slow go with live theater, anything indoors. There's still a you know, reticence to be among a lot of folks because of COVID and, of course, now the flu and RSV. You know, pick an airborne anything.
Yeah.
So it's still a challenge. All we can do as an organization is to keep providing quality professional work on our stages, a diverse choice of pieces on our stages, and educational programs too. We're starting those back up again. And the people will come. You know, this is an MSA of what, 1.3, 1.4 million, something like that, right? The statistical area.
Right,
right.
We
know that there are more people who will come see theater. So our job is to keep producing what we're doing and doing it in a professional way, market our butts off as much as we can afford to. And the other part of that, too, Mark, is not just attracting people to us. We've really taken it upon ourselves to invest ourselves into the community as well. People aren't going to trust coming to us unless we go to them first. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about obvious things, right? Like, we need to go into Orange Mound. We need to go to North Memphis. We need to go to West Memphis. We need to go to Fraser. We need to, as opposed to just assuming all these people are going to come to us. Why should they? They don't know us. They don't trust us. I mean, we can send a postcard, but they go, who the hell's that? I don't know them. Right.
Right.
So, So we're trying to do a better job getting ourselves to those locations. We're doing it through partnerships on a national level with HBCUs and Latinx majority theater programs. Locally, we're branching out our auditions to not just have auditions for our shows here at Playhouse, but to actually take them into various locations around the community. We haven't done that yet. That's where we're moving next. Because again, you have to build trust before you just show up and say, hey, we're having auditions in your neighborhood. We don't want to take advantage of anybody. We want folks to trust what we're doing and why we're doing it. I think we have a ways to go in that regard, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. But we're making progress there. So it's this multifaceted reason why we don't have as many folks as we should, but we're doing the best we can to try and make that happen and learning from it. But I think they'll get there. I think as we get a better handle on COVID and some of the other things that make folks a little more reticent, to come out, we'll see those numbers grow. Mm-hmm. They have to. It's art, but at the end of the day, it's also business. So, there are, rubrics we have to follow in terms of getting folks, as we say, butts in seats, either in the theater or in the classrooms, so that we can pay all of the people that we have on our payroll. We're a professional theater. We pay everybody.
Right.
And our goal, over the next number of years is to get those salaries up. And the only way we can do it is by getting more earned revenue, the tickets, a little more unearned revenue, although we have extremely generous philanthropic sources here in the Mid-South. But we're not full. We're not at capacity yet. So I need to get more folks into the theater.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as we've said before, there's just nothing like it. There's just nothing like live theater.
Absolutely not. I steal this from Ned Canty because he said it once. I said, Ned, I'm going to steal this from you. Theater, and he was saying opera, of course, at the time, is built in such a way you have to have both components. You have to have the folks on the stage, and you have to have the audience sitting in the auditorium breathing the same air. Now, I know, with COVID and things like that, that gets to be a little weird to say, but metaphorically, it's exactly what needs to happen. The art of theater doesn't happen unless those two components are in the same room at the same time. It doesn't happen on Zoom for the same reason it doesn't happen on TV or movie. That's a different art form. It's a different interaction.
Yeah.
Live theater, live dance, live opera, concerts to various degrees, you want people in the same room because there's that electrical energy between the two components.
Yeah.
If we don't have an audience, then it's a rehearsal. That's not to say it can't be artistic for the person working on that piece, but that's an internal thing. If the audience is in the auditorium and there's nobody on stage, I don't know what that's called. That's just being in the wrong place, I guess. So you have to have those two components so that magic happens. That live one-time event will never happen again.
Yep.
Even if they come back, see the same show five times. It's different every single time.
Yeah, exactly.
It makes it exciting for an audience, especially when something goes wrong, right? An audience loves it when something goes wrong. Folks listening didn't know, but when we started this, the fire alarm went off.
Right.
Right. Mark, right. I'm sure cut that out. But, that's live. I wish I could say that only happened to me once doing live theater, but it hasn't. It's happened more than once. And the audience goes, how are they going to get over that? How's this going to work? It's exciting all of a sudden, right? Uh-huh. But it's not just the screw-ups. Obviously, it's having that magical moment of, I have been changed. I have been moved. I am now questioning things in my life. It's certainly happening with Scottsboro Boys, and it happened with If Pekin Is a Duck. I hope the same thing happens with Roe and Ink. I hope when they see Freckleface Strawberry, any of the fun shows like that, they walk out the same way going, I'm going to think more about this.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's unlike any other art form.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I use the term electric, mm-hmm. With the energy in the room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So patrons can, once again, they can go to playhouseonthesquare.org.
That's right. Yeah, playhouseonthesquare.org. All the shows are up there, great descriptions. Make sure you're checking into those descriptions because they're not all for everybody. We want to make sure you're coming to the shows that you're prepared to see. We don't ever shy away from language or subject matter. We don't shy away from nudity. never gratuitous about anything, but if it's important, we're going to say it or do it or show it. Not all the shows are like that, certainly.
Yeah.
We have family shows and musicals and dramas and comedies. But yeah, playhouseonthesquare.org. Certainly call our box office at 901-726-4656. Or Google Playhouse on the Square. Don't do Playhouse Square because you'll get a theater up in Ohio somewhere. So Playhouse on the Square.
And if you clicked on the Storyboard website, we've got links to Playhouse all over the place on our website.
Yay.
And also on our streaming platforms for the podcast. You can click on those links as well.
Great.
Excellent. Michael Detroit, executive producer of Playhouse and Square, thank you again for providing the space.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Playhouse on the Square's production of the Scottsboro Boys runs through February 19th. That is a Sunday 2 p.m. matinee. And while you're there, be sure to check out Charles Schiff's art exhibition in the main lobby. It's a series of portraits and mixed media that Mr. Schiff created to reflect the haunting nature of the Scottsboro Boys. It's really worth checking out. Information and tickets on all Playhouse shows can be found on playhouseonthesquare.org. You've been listening to Storyboard 30 from FM 89.3 WIPL. Thanks to our media partner, Playhouse on the Square, and our sponsors at the Memphis Library Foundation. And as always, thanks to WIPL producer, Vance Durbin, and to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3. This has been your host, Mark Fleischer, inviting you to join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with Memphians who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week.